Welcome to Alumni Live, the podcast. These are conversations with Grand Valley State University film and video graduates about the industry, the film video major, and alumni profiles.
Welcome back to another episode of the Alumni Podcast. I'm Samantha Drugel. I am a senior at GVSU in the film and video major program. I am also in the JBM program as well. I am here with Justin Wojciechowski, who is the Senior Creative Director at United Esports. Welcome, Justin. Did I get all that right?
Hello, Sam. Yes, it's good to see you. Yeah, I'm the Chief Creative Officer of United Esports, which is a premium creative media and marketing agency that really specializes in the areas of gaming and esports and, you know, all things fun and interactive.
We're here to talk today about a very niche and kind of underrepresented career opportunity for film and video, which is the esports realm. And there's a lot of video that is involved with that. I guess let's dive into what you do for esports.
Yeah. United Esports is a company that really touches all parts of the gaming and media space, where anyone who plays a game, interacts with developers, from influencers to the marketing side, we touch it all. We've worked with the top developers in the space to promote their games. We've worked with individual esports teams and productions in order to integrate into the broadcasts at the competitive level. And we've worked with major AAA brands who are looking to basically develop relationships with a new audience, a new generation, and really trying to meet them in their passion point and finding interesting and authentic ways to do that.
Yeah, I think in talking about what we're passionate about, I think taking your hobby and turning it into a career is one of the best ways to find a job. That's how I found my love for esports. I've talked to you once before, and that's when I was just starting out as a producer for our esports club here at Grand Valley. And for those who don't know, we do have an esports program here at Grand Valley, both club for people who don't want to play competitively, but also we have quite a few competitive teams. And all of those teams have the ability to be broadcasted live. And each of those people have the ability to try their hand at broadcasting, too, if they're not sure they want to go into that and want to try that out for themselves.
That's amazing. Sam, where were you back in 05 when we were graduating and just pouring into hours of gaming at night?
05, let's see. I was 1 year old.
There you go. All right. Well, that hurts my heart a little bit.
Oh, I'm so sorry. So sorry. I'm starting to get to the point where there are some nostalgia kicks. Like, I just modded my 3DS.
Okay, there you go.
You know, without going too much off topic, there is a lot of things that come with getting a little bit older in the gaming space.
I love it.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the industry now that you're recalling your first time with it. Just kind of how the industry has developed. Esports has been around since the 70s, I think, if I'm getting it right. Maybe that's a little too early.
Yeah, I think that's a bit early for esports as a whole. Gaming as an industry, right, has been around for generations, right? Anyone that's going to come around a table and whether it's playing cards, whether it's, you know, interacting, things like D&D and that kind of stuff, right? They all had very early roots of bringing people together for sort of a common purpose, being recreational and fun and whatnot. With the onset of more home accessible entertainment, right? Especially with the success of the early NES in the US market and whatnot kind of taking off. Gaming as a digital device was certainly a massive talking point. It was a huge wave that rippled through the consumer base. And it was interesting because growing up in that time, you didn't necessarily know whether it was here to stay or a really cool gimmick of the moment, right? Like, no one could project in the future at that time, especially if you were a kid and just interacting with these things out of pure passion. No one could have seen how far it would come and that one day there would be professional careers rooted in this. So as an industry, it's certainly become an amazing thing to watch, to be a part of. First, just as a fan of gaming and video games, and then watching a professional scene come out of that, and then all the media and all of the opportunity as an industry, right? Like, it's been quite a journey and a ride to get here, and it's still moving by leaps and bounds every day. One interesting point, and I think this is going towards your ultimate question, is if you really look at today, right, in 2026 and the current market, especially when we're talking about what I'd say is the lower end of Gen Z and especially Gen Alpha, gaming is one of the only almost guaranteed shared social experiences that they have when it comes to the cultural identifiers or water cooler moments, right? Because it's not guaranteed that every house has the same subscriptions. One house may have Netflix while the other has Disney Plus. So what used to be shows where everyone would gather around and we all were generally aware, at least when I was growing up, of the main things that were the most popular, the most talked about, and these are the cultural magnets. Kids now don't necessarily have that. They don't have access or watch the same things, at least on one scale. The creator economy has sort of become that for a lot of that generation.
Yes.
So there's that piece of it. But video games, as almost like a glue, has really become such a connector, especially for younger generations. And so I think in some ways it's almost taken the place of traditional media and roles that it had played before as kind of generational connectors. And you can see that throughout the industry. You can watch it over the last 10 years and how it's developed and where it's gone. It's really fascinating and a fun space to be in.
Yeah, I just looked it up. I was curious while you were talking when the first esports event really was. And it was 1972.
There you go. What was the event?
Space Invaders, I think it was. The Olympics.
Interesting. Okay, sure. So if you're going to consider...
Like yeah. Arcade games.
Yeah. That, I guess I was thinking more in the...
The traditional,
the digitally connected, the more traditional sense. But sure, if you look back at a lot of the earlier, more arcade competitions and whatnot, you're right. Then that would be as far back as that. That's great, which is cool.
It's absolutely amazing how far professional broadcasts for esports have come, especially with the creator space that's available. Like, I think there's definitely two sides, like you were saying, to esports. There's Twitch, YouTube, streaming, that kind of content.
Right.
And then there's esports events, which I think is arguably more esports as a profession. You know, LCS is a massive one, Valorant Nationals, all that kind of stuff. These massive events with almost like expo centers and booths everywhere, multi-million dollar broadcasting setups, all that hype that you would bring to a normal sports event brought into like a gaming competition. And you're right, it is more of a mark of our generation that we're seeing gaming not as a niche hobby anymore, but we all do it. That's how we communicate with each other. And not only that, but we hold it to the same pedestal, if not more, than say a football match, you know?
Sure. Absolutely.
So the broadcast industry has to grow to meet the standards of our passion for esports. And I think that's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. And I think we've actually seen, especially on if we're going to talk the pure esports side of things, right? Because in some ways, you also have to remember, no matter how big it is and how complicated some of the productions of really big tentpole events are, esports is always going to be the smallest part of the pie as gaming as a whole, right? Like it is it's the F1 racing of gaming, right? Not every gamer is a diehard competitive gamer. There's so many genres and so many ecosystems to be a part of and to participate in, so many communities. So yes, I would say on the highest end, like the major esports for sure fall into that category. Mm-hmm. But what I think is also so interesting and wonderful is that you can find unique production focused elements on the biggest of the biggest and certainly the most exciting. I've been in many of those rooms. I've been a part of many of those teams and what those are like. And all the way down to a creator who wants to create something, you know, in Animal Crossing by themselves and they're putting some content out in the world and they have their own style. All of that is production. All of that is visual communication to an audience. And so there is just a great crossover for any student or anyone looking to potentially take their passion of making something, making content, being creatively driven to produce a product, and seeing the gaming space as a whole as a massive potential and possibility.
Yeah. I want to kind of bring it back because I bet you and I could talk about gaming in general for hours. What kind of videos do you make? And not only what kind of videos do you make, but what kind of specific jobs and roles does it take to make those videos?
Sure. I'll back up just so I can explain this and that.
For sure.
My personal path was from Grand Valley. I was a student there. I made incredible memories there, lifelong friendships. My primary writing partner and I both went to Grand Valley together. We are still very strong. In fact, he just flew out to California for a show I'm on right now. And so that was a great sort of training time and onboarding time and time to develop my personal style and craft, right? And then my first move, basically 5 days out of graduating, I flew to California like a very wide-eyed, very innocent little puppy and came out here. Really, I knew no one, had no real contacts in the industry, and basically had to try to figure out how to navigate this space and whatnot.
Right.
So my path was a very traditional one. I worked in TV and movies and commercials, and those are sort of the three big sectors, I guess, if you're going to come out to California, right? Normally, you're bouncing between these things. And they all come with their benefits and drop-offs. And I did that for over a decade and really cut my teeth on just pure production at every level. Eventually, I got to a point in my career where I moved slightly more over into writing and worked to develop that. Like I said, along with Josh Hutchins, who also graduated from Grand Valley with me. And we became writers who had to then sort of start over in the career and try to work up a different ladder on that side, right? We eventually got into writers' rooms, worked on various projects, whatnot. My first foray into gaming and the gaming space happened because Nintendo at the time, this was just pre the launch of the first Switch. So Switch
gotcha.
1. I know we're on Switch 2 for everybody, but...
I'm still on Switch 1 at heart.
Okay. Yeah. So before the Switch, I got brought in to help Nintendo create a show to grow a brand new channel that they were trying to launch on YouTube. And so they needed content, and I built out a whole plan with different this, that, and the other. We launched, and I ran 3 seasons of a show, which throughout that, they brought me on as a producer because what I wrote, the people who were pure producers and production people didn't necessarily know how to perfectly translate the writing to action because they weren't gamers. They didn't know the source material, and I did. So I stepped into producing. I produced multiple seasons of a show for Nintendo, right? And that was my first official step from what you'd call traditional Hollywood industry into the gaming industry. And this was around the time where things were really moving in Hollywood. The industry was starting to really get hit by a bubble. And so a lot of productions were going down, but a lot of gaming was coming in to fill those gaps. So it was an interesting time. Places that had traditionally been studios for years and years and years were now becoming little esports hubs in gaming and whatnot. And so I was amazed at how one-to-one my skill set from creating content and being a producer and writer and just creating media immediately translated into the gaming space, which I had never considered from a professional level before that. I just sort of found my way into it. What I think that immediately taught me is like, this is a massive side of the industry of just pure media creation that not only I'm sure did I not think of, but, you know, man, would it be cool to explain to the next generation stepping into the media side of things like, hey, this is a very exciting, very quickly growing sector that you can immediately find some work in. Especially because the traditional side was seeing a taper and a sort of a downturn in jobs, right?
Yes.
Television, less and less, movies, less and less. And so, especially with the streamer wars and all that kind of stuff going on at the time, you know, I think it was very natural to now find those moments. So coming back to the heart of your question, like what kind of jobs are there? There is literally every job that one used to be able to find in more of a traditional media and Hollywood set over on the gaming space. There are camera operators, there's writers, there's directors, there's producers, there's prop makers, there's graphic designers, editors, sound designers. Like literally the gaming side has all of that as well. And I would say, of course, it depends year to year, whatnot, but the amount of possibilities there is actually encouraging when you look at maybe the rest of the industry and seeing the numbers of where those jobs used to be and maybe they are now. So I would say if a student who is looking to hopefully obtain a job within the creative arts, visual media and whatnot, the gaming space is, a great place to consider.
For sure. I was surprised at how many jobs were open in terms of gaming, because I think when we think of gaming, we think of it as just a one-off hobby and that you can't really make a job out of it.
Sure. Yeah.
I come from the generation, especially who growing up, everybody wants to be a YouTuber. That's right, all we want to be. YouTuber, yep. Twitch streamer, content creator. And now we see that space has been oversaturated a lot. And that's not really obtainable for a lot of people. Even somebody like me or you who have an immense passion for video work and gaming. It's nearly impossible. But, you know, when you step into the professional broadcasting space and still get to be around gaming, like I'm at all when I walk into a production room to do a stream and I set everything up, I'm doing everything, setting lighting, setting up the set, miking everybody up, checking our softwares. And now I watch video games That's what I do all day. And that's amazing for somebody who loves games. And I'm sure you can relate to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to talk about the types of content a little bit more. You mentioned a couple of shows, the show that you worked on for Nintendo. I'm sure people would be interested in hearing like what kind of show that means. I think people are very into specific genres, specific types of writing or types of films. Mm. Just what kind of content is out there for people who want to go into the space?
Sure. Okay. So forms of content, starting with probably the largest bucket, if you will, of what's out there is normally going to be on the commercial side of the industry one way or the other, right? There is a massive amount of brands and developers and people who basically want to leverage the passion point of gaming and the culture of gaming in order to ultimately get the attention one way or the other of the audience, right? So there is a plethora of jobs as far as writing and conceptual storyboard artists or whatnot that I work with every day in order to ultimately take a need, we'll just chalk it up to say a commercial need one way or the other, create media around trying to naturally or as naturally as you can bring that commercial need into a space like this and make it feel as authentic as possible, right? There's certainly people who have failed at doing that and failed at it pretty spectacularly. But then there's those who, what I feel and what my company's won many awards on and what we're known for is trying to make it so that if a brand comes into the space and wants to form hopefully a lasting relationship with this audience, that what we do is, to the audience's perspective, is an opportunity they wouldn't have gotten had that brand not come into the space. The types of roles and the things that one can do, even from a writing standpoint or an individual craft standpoint, whether it's editing, sound design, whatever.
Sure.
There's that commercial edge to the gaming side that is probably the largest bucket that you can find yourself participating in one way or the other.
Right.
Even the show I did for Nintendo, we got to do 3 seasons. It was absolutely a blast. I loved it. In the end, there is a commercial slant to everything, right? Like no brand out there, I don't care who you are, puts out content just from the goodness of their heart because they just want to entertain. It's always like, hey, remember me, look at me, follow me, like me, all that kind of stuff. So there's always that, right? But it is still something that I think needs skilled individuals to figure out, concept through, understand the audience, and bring all these skills together in order to make a product that ultimately people enjoy. And then, you know, you can see things happen.
When you say, I make a show for Nintendo, what is that show? Is it something like, are you familiar with Arcane?
I know some of the cast over there. And it's,
do you actually? We'll talk about that later. I'm a massive fan. But like, is that the show you beat? Is it a show or is it like, are we talking showing off different parts of a game? Are we talking, you know? Like,
sure. For Nintendo, again, this was, 12 years ago or whatever. This was a show that they were doing to launch their new YouTube channel. So it was more for entertainment. Let's put it that way. The goal was, yes, it's Nintendo. They wanted to use it as a platform to talk about their latest and greatest games and this and that and the other. But we had a lot of creative freedom to try to bring kids and families back week after week in order to experience the fun that we were having. So we developed a ton of just silly things and whatnot. I remember one night we were up till 4 a.m. gluing tacos to a cardboard castle just for a joke that I wrote. And it was, I always talk about that night of like, sometimes you're like, why, is this a real career? I wrote a joke and I wanted to see it through. And so I literally stayed up with the production team to try to figure out how to glue tacos to cardboard in order to break it the next day on set. You know, it's just, it's one of those things. So it was not like Arcane, what I'd say is on the Netflix side is, you know, purely story-driven entertainment that serves a specific function. This was not that per se, but this was still three and a half seasons of entertainment for entertainment's sake that had the roots in some form of still commercial brand equity, trying to get out in the space and make a relationship with the audience.
We're taking a short break to tell you about the Dirk Koenig Memorial Film and Video Scholarship. Here's Gretchen Vinich remembering Dirk Koenig.
The Koenig Scholarship enables students to get that kind of an education, to be a good filmmaker, to be able to express their voice, and to continue Dirk's dream.
For more information and to donate to the scholarship, visit the link in the description. Now back to the show.
We're talking more of in the realm of like, I don't want to say content creation because it is still a show, but trying to mimic the same energy as traditional gaming content, YouTube content.
Yeah, I think this was still early enough in the YouTube sphere that I don't think we were necessarily competing super hard to emulate. It was still right. Everyone kind of just doing what they thought was fun to do. But yes, in essence, it was long form YouTube content at that time. Yeah.
It's definitely evolved over time. Sure. Is that kind of how we're still looking? Is that what we're going towards? Is still that YouTube-esque content style? Or are we trying to switch more to something that's more story-driven, like Arcane?
Do you mean as an industry as a whole?
Yeah, I guess you can answer personally for your company or as an industry.
Oh, and for my company, my company personally still works heavily on both the media and marketing side. I'm in the middle of another different show. It's more of a tabletop RPG show that we're halfway through production right now called Rigmarole. Super fun. Really, really a great project to be a part of. So that is just because we loved the concept. We wanted to do something and put it out there. So right. I'm the showrunner on that, and we're in the thick of that production right now. But what I'd say is the company's sort of bread and butter exists on the media and marketing side of the gaming space. So there are people who want to come and they may want what they consider to be a show or long form content, something that is consumable from the audience standpoint, from a gamer standpoint and mindset, and making sure that what they're putting out there really resonates. And that's how I always look at everything we do, especially on the marketing side of my company, putting the media side aside for a second. But I kind of have these three golden rules that my entire team, the creative team, the production team, the post-production team, is everything we do has to fall and connect with these rules. The first one is we have to find the fun, no matter what it is. I've been on different panels and whatnot where I've freely given these rules, but I genuinely believe this is how you win the audience in the end, is you have to find the fun, whatever it is. Gaming at its heart is fun. It is something we do for leisure. It's something we do to forget the world's problems. It's something we do to connect with people. It fulfills a creative need, get your brain going and thinking about the worlds and the characters you're interacting with. So it's an inherently fun space. And anything that goes into that and activates the audience and looks to capture their attention should be equally fun. The second rule is that you have to know the audience. The audiences who will show up and really consume Sims content is factually different than those who are showing up to watch Call of Duty. Like, it's, they're very different audiences, and you need to treat them as such. And to do that, you need to research them. You need to understand them. You need to be in those communities. And so the creatives on my team, their number one thing is they need to dive into those communities and make sure they understand what they want, so we can ultimately not just meet them, but supersede those expectations.
Right.
And the third one is you got to make it memorable, right? If you're not trying to be talkable or push the limit or do something out of the ordinary, it's sort of like, well, what are you doing in the first place, right? Especially from a marketing standpoint. So if it passes those three things, then as a company, by and large, that's what we're all about. And that goes as far as working with massive clients on the pure marketing side to also do campaigns, global campaigns, nationwide campaigns or whatnot that are targeting the gaming audience and mindset. I'll give you an example. One of my absolute favorite ones, we did such a fun campaign with Old Spice a couple of seasons back, where they're really going after the demo they wanted to go after. They targeted someone in the space that they thought would really align with their target demo. And so we worked along with a content creator named CypherPK, who was really known for Fortnite. Lovely, lovely individual. And my team created the idea of, instead of just handing him product and having him do an ad read, why don't we do something that, again, it's that third golden rule of mine, is like, got to do something memorable. And so I came up with the concept of, well, what if we flew him to California? He's not based here, but what if we flew him and I recreated his gaming setup in a studio here locally? And I mean recreated, like, piece for piece, object for object. We recreated it all. And we created it to be a breakaway wall in which we could do a stunt live during one of his broadcasts. And so, you know, we had this moment in which we introduced a character that represented sort of odor, like body odor, in essence. Sam Forbes, lovely, lovely character actor and improv actor. And so while gamers are showing up to his stream and participating the way they normally would, suddenly somebody kind of weasels in the background and starts messing with stuff. And all of a sudden you create that, like, big question mark moment. Like, what's going on? This isn't normal. Like, what are we doing? What is this? And so we're gauging that. We have all these stunts and tricks and things we're doing. And eventually when we've kind of hit that fever pitch of the audience just being like, what is happening? We blast through a wall with, at that time, the product's mascot, which is this eagle. We blast through the wall and this eagle tackles this character, this odor character, and takes him out. Like, to be there live and watch that moment happen and watch the audience react, and even those who maybe came in after that moment and was like, yo, what happened to his wall? Like, he has a hole through the wall. You know, like, we created scenery behind the wall so it looked like the living room. It was just such a fun campaign. And everyone who got to be a part of it, who saw clips of it or whatever, that was a moment that I think was, that's exactly the heart of what we try to do, is if we're going to bring something commercial in this space, we want to do it in such a way where the audience is going to be happy we're there and get something unique and make a moment out of it that is fun. And then obviously buys the brand a lot of goodwill and the fact that they're willing to go that far and meet the audience where they're at, right? So that gives you a well-rounded picture of, you know, we've done everything from the pure commercial and campaigns to creating and looking for ways to create long form, short form, everything from socials, TikTok, the gamut.
Yeah. As soon as you said that, I'm like, that is such a 2010 to 2020 YouTube gamer aesthetic, streaming environment aesthetic that you've perfectly captured and turned into an ad. To me, that sold me what your content is. You're basically creating advertisements for brands who are not necessarily in the gaming space, but want to sell to gamers.
Yeah. Basically non-endemic brands. So things that might be completely outside of gaming, right? If your endemic brands are keyboard makers and developers and headset and mouse, brands that are naturally already targeting gamers because their product is obviously very inherent to gaming. To your non-endemic brands, things like Old Spice or the Olympics, something outside of the space that is looking to come into it in order to reach a new generation, a new audience, and grow ultimately.
Yeah. And then you did touch on a little bit the parts of your job that are not necessarily advertising. Like you said, there's always a commercial edge to everything we do.
Sure.
But
commercials keep the lights on, to be honest.
Exactly. But you do things that are not pure advertisement, like you said, the RPG type show.
We're running a show just because we're passionate about it. We love the idea. We love TTRPGs. And so we developed a show called Rigmarole that we're in the middle of production right now on, and two episodes of already aired. Another one airs actually tonight at 7:00. We do a lot and we have a lot of touch points, but I think it just shows how versatile the space itself can be, how interesting and wide range this audience is and how many ways you can really reach them.
Yeah. I think what a lot of people are interested in is, okay, I might like gaming, but is this the type of content that I actually want to make?
Yeah.
Right. So like, say somebody did want to do that. Now, how do we go from a degree in college to this kind of job? Because I'm sure it is not the same path that you described earlier.
Sure. Yeah. I get taken out to many a coffee asking, hey, how do I get in the industry? What do I do? What do I tell my kid? Or if they're right at the edge of entering it themselves and want to ask a lot of questions. So I would say any creative industry is going to be a challenge to enter and to succeed in. That's just the reality of something that tends to grab the attention of a lot of people, because especially on the outside, it looks fun and therefore draws a lot of immediate attention. The truth is, today, if you were to look for a job, whether it be gaming specific type job, even if it's on the media side, or more of a traditional Hollywood style job, the truth is that there is not any one way to go about it. So you have to always approach it as many ways as possible. You're going to want to try to connect with as many people as you can. You're going to try to reach out through all of the digital means, whether it be LinkedIn, finding them online, emailing them if you can find a workable email. The more angles you have in order to approach someone and let them know you're interested is always going to be better on the side of the one looking for the job. I have personally hired many people because they sought me out and I didn't know they were there. And then the right person approached me, and looking into them and looking at their skill set, I was like, you're my guy, right? So there's a variety of ways to go about it, job boards and whatnot for sure. But I find trying to reach out directly to the person who might be in charge of any one department you would be the most interested in, and introducing yourself and showcasing any work you may have, but being proactive in as many ways as you can is always going to be, I think, your number one way to try to break into the ground floor of any one industry on the creative side. And
sure.
It almost doesn't matter what side of the industry. It could be as big as working at Netflix to Blizzard to working for individual content creators who have grown their own teams. There's many creators who have more than 50 employees just to keep their own channels up and running, right? And so all of those are great options and possibilities.
And what kind of work do you think that the people specifically in the esports space are looking for? Is it the same as film where they want resume, demo reel, portfolios? What are we looking for?
I think it varies to a degree. This is always one of those areas where the gut instinct is always to say, yeah, you want to have all those things. You want to have reels. You want to have this, that, the other. I have never, I need to be careful with my words because I want to make sure this is right. I have never landed a job because of a reel or a resume. In fact, I think, and I could be wrong here, so don't hold me 100% to this, but I think in my entire career, I was only asked for a resume, I believe, once. So much of it came from word of mouth of my work ethic and my ability to basically be incredibly hungry to learn and honeable, quickly learn the things that I don't know about any job as I keep stepping up through my career so that I can quickly figure it out and then ideally become master of that until you keep moving up just outside where you're comfortable, right? Man, early on, I got honestly most of my jobs simply because I had what they chalked up to be a Midwest mentality, which normally just meant I was the guy that would be willing to put in the work. My goal was to show up before everyone.
Yes, and guy.
Yeah, exactly. And leave after everyone. So a good work ethic is absolutely something that I think, especially in an industry that becomes more and more and more picky and choosy, that is certainly, I think, a big factor. Now, I say that all not trying to dissuade someone from having a amazing body of work to show, right? Because I think that that's coupled with the number one thing I would tell any student, Grand Valley or otherwise, and have many times, is that if you are looking to get into a creative art and you're not actively creating art right now, then you're sort of asking for a very uphill battle, right? I think there's sort of a falsity of thinking, hey, I'm just going to think about and internalize what it would be like to work in a cool field without actually starting the groundwork now. And, you know, in today's day and age where you can pretty much create just as compelling content with a few friends, your phone, and maybe a mic so that your audio goes up just a little bit, you really have such amazing tools at your disposal now that if you're not using them, you really are doing yourself sort of a disservice, because when you get to that spot, you get to that job and you're asked to do something, hey, I need you to, if it's post-production, I need you to come in here and start compositing this and that and the other. You've never done that before, right? Like your learning curve, just, it really takes you out of the running much earlier in the process. So whether it's writing, whether it's camera work, whether it's pure creatives. I've brought up and trained many just purely in the creative space where their entire job was to come up with good ideas and then bounce them off and mold them and whatnot. And it's like, if you're not actively doing that stuff now, then I really do think that you got quite the challenge to enter a increasingly competitive space. And so that's what I would suggest of anyone. Even if the chances of, let's call it, riding the organic algorithm of YouTube is not your main desire, you know, the amount of effort you can put into still creating content and putting it out there and learning the ropes of what the digital space has to offer and watching your own craft become something unique to you and your voice, I think that you're missing the opportunity that you have during this time.
Yeah, for sure. Just to recap all of that, it's good to have those key things. Good to have a resume, a demo reel, a portfolio, because it means you're working on it. You're working towards something that you really like.
Yeah.
But you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the goal isn't to, you talked about making connections, right? And that's how you get a job in this industry. The goal isn't to reach out and shove all of that in their face necessarily.
Yeah. one of the best ways to, I would say, meet, even have connections now, is there's so many ways to literally digitally connect with people and then start communicating with them, whether it's finding someone within the industry who you're like, that would be the job I would want to have. It's like, great, well, connect with them, whether through a variety of different ways to connect. See if you can reach out, ping them, see if you can take a half hour Zoom meeting to ask them questions, or if you're local, take them to coffee or that kind of thing. You'd be surprised at how often those things pan out to be yeses and yeah, sure, why not? Or, you know, at least some chats where eventually when those people or their companies are looking to hire, whatever, all of a sudden you pop up in their brains of going, hey, there's somebody who has been communicating with me a lot about this, actually. That is something that is certainly, whether you're a freshman at GVSU and you know you are industry bound one way or the other, gaming or otherwise, this is the time, I think, to absolutely start doing that.
Yeah, for sure. Making connections with people instead of using them as a one-stop shop for a give me a job type of deal.
Right, absolutely. Because those come, yeah. I mean, especially in the age of AI where I wake up to probably, I don't know, 75 emails every day that are all auto-generated asking me for one thing or another. So most of my days just deleting a million emails just so I can get to the ones that are actually business related and important. And so
for sure,
I think developing even now over time, some kind of communication with people of industry is only going to serve you down the road. If anything, it'll also teach you just how to communicate with people and etiquette of writing and communicating. Yeah.
So going back to experiences that we have at Grand Valley to build that rapport and build that portfolio and start working on your career, we have an esports program now, like I mentioned before, but I don't think you guys had one when you were going to school.
I wish you did.
I'm sure you would have absolutely loved it. We would love to have you back. What kind of experiences did you grab from Grand Valley when you went to school here to help shape you into the career you are now?
Sure. Okay. So my time at Grand Valley was great. And it was great partly because of the class that I was in and the connections I made to that class that continued on into the future and ultimately helped a lot of my career. I met, literally became a lifelong best friend of Josh Hutchins. He and I went through many classes together. And when we graduated, we stayed connected. I moved out to Hollywood and he followed right behind, and our careers continued to work off each other. So when it came to the experiences that we basically built on, a lot of those came back down to our days at Grand Valley, where it was figuring things out together, right? It was renting equipment and taking it across state and experimenting, shooting ice that had formed in Port Huron and taking cameras down these ice trenches as if it was like the Battle of Hoth, right? Or all the late nights going through, back then it was CD racks in the library, trying to find the exact right music for something, or trying to finagle the janitors to let us into the equipment room when we, you know, hadn't reserved something so we could potentially still fiddle with a few cameras before our big shoot and that kind of stuff. So there was absolutely wonderful moments and memories that we made. But really what we were making is friendship and partnerships. And I can't say enough to any student there that might be listening to this or any of these podcasts, is this is your time to try to develop or forge some relationships with people that you can ultimately move forward in an industry that is so relationally bound, right? And I had to learn this early on. There's some things that you have to kind of figure out how you ultimately sharpen each other rather than dull each other, right? But there are moments that I can absolutely look back to and be like, yes, had we not tackled this together, we wouldn't have developed the skills that we use every day. Everything from figuring out how our own comedic style is, our writing style, how we approached looking at contracts together. There's so many things that we learned as firsts, especially back in our days at Grand Valley, that I wouldn't have traded for the world. And that's what I think is, I hope that any students that are currently there and studying and practicing and whatnot is like, use this time to forge good partnerships and try to carry those forward into an industry that ultimately relies on strong partnerships, right? I would say my time there, certainly that is one of the key and most valuable takeaways. I also absolutely loved, and I hope it's still this way, I don't know for sure, but is the amount of support that at least our class was given by the staff and the program to get our hands on equipment and get our class in front of working professionals as much as humanly possible. One of the best pieces of advice we ever got as a class was from Jack Anderson, who was a visiting cinematographer for one of our summer films. And he straight up looked the class in the eye and said, if there's any other industry you can happily do, please go do that. This industry is not for everyone. So I would say this is a true statement that I've really seen play out throughout my career, is that the creative arts, the industry, whether it be gaming, Hollywood, whatever, is not for everyone. In the end of the day, it might look fun from afar, but it is work and it is long hours and it is sometimes very hard situations. And so if you are only driven by the idea of this and whatnot, then you're probably made for it. Pursue it with all of your ability and passion, right? But if you're on the fence and you're like, I don't know, I could also see myself being whatever, a teacher, a nurse, a this, a that, the other, like, great, go do that thing.
Yeah.
It's a serious piece of information and advice you should really consider.
Yeah. Yeah, we still have a great support system in the film and video program. I don't know how many times that I've gotten advice that was not necessarily related to class from professors. Sometimes the professors just in the program that I haven't even had yet and don't really know, but they're always willing to help. Well, thank you for taking the time to talk with us about esports, especially since it's a very niche topic that we hope will grow only in time.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, I hope this encourages people to stop by the esports club and chat with us.
There you go. I hope they do. Sam, had you been there back in the day, I absolutely would have been a part of the club. I think it would have been a really great experience and honestly may have just changed the very trajectory that my own career took off in. So I'm glad you're there and I'm glad that you're going to leave a legacy behind and ultimately change the school moving forward.
Oh, yeah. We're always looking for help. We're always looking for people who just want production experience. And if they don't like esports, you know, there is a lot of things I think apply to the industry as a whole.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure they'll get something out of it either way. Again, thank you for talking to us. And this has been another episode of Alumni Live.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Alumni Live, the podcast. Subscribe to our podcast to hear more from our alumni across the industry. Check out Alumni Live on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for more conversations and networking. Let us know what topics you want to hear our alumni talk about. The Grand Valley State University Film Video Alumni Network is here for you, and we're glad that you're here. Thank you for listening.